Welcome to It's Personal, Finance Canada. I'm Christine Conway.
And I'm Cameron Conway.
And this podcast is a very personal look at personal finance in Canada. Welcome to It's Personal Finance Canada. I'm Christine Conway, here with Cameron Conway, and we are in mid-April 2024. A lot of us are scrambling last minute to file our tax returns, and with that process comes some tax tips. So just kind of things we've been bumping into over the last month, both for 2023, for those of you that are still trying to file, and for 2024. If we kind of use this period as the end of the first quarter and a way to kind of look into your future at the rest of what this year will hold.
Okay, so let me guess what tax tip number one is. Is it pay your taxes?
You know what? That does seem like an important part of filing your return and making sure it's done before the April 30th deadline. But yes, filing your taxes, paying your taxes. I wonder what the stats are on people that don't, hey?
I did see some paperwork that there were 30 million tax returns filed last year. I'm not sure percentage-wise how that works out, but it shows that a good amount of people are. And I guess an alternative to tax tip number one would be get an expensive accountant.
Which we definitely recommend. Not necessarily the expensive part, but definitely the accountant part.
Oh no, the expensive one helps you counteract tax tip 1A.
What's tax tip 1A?
Pay your taxes.
Oh my goodness. Are you saying you're on a loophole hunt for 2023, 2024?
I am legally obliged to say no.
So what I like about tax season, other than the incredible busyness and chaos that comes with it, is that this is actually the perfect chance to look at last year. A little bit of introspection right up my alley. Nothing should be more honest than your taxes, at least we hope.
Yeah, I guess another fun part of this year is seeing all the accountants come in and out of the coffee shops around us, just kind of shaking, just trying to get through another day.
Yeah, you can definitely identify the accountants by the bags under their eyes and the number of coffees they've had throughout the day to make it through the season. Hopefully, though, as things slow down after, they all get a well-deserved vacation, right?
But, oh, no, right into corporate tax season.
And self-employed filings, if they haven't already, with the June deadline. So, but let's take a look at how using our tax returns can be beneficial to us as people. And I feel like a lot of this gets lost now because so many of us e-file or use the accountant and you kind of get that pre-filled list of questions or, you know, the almighty algorithm is directing you down path A or B based on what you've selected.
Well, exactly. I think the paperwork I saw, 92% of Canadians e-filed last year, as opposed to the humble 8% that still use pen and paper.
And don't own a computer. No, I'm joking. But yes, it almost feels like a bit of a missed opportunity, right? Because back in the day, I remember when I was in my 20s and a budding young financial planner, and I wanted to prove myself that I could do all these things. So I used to take the pencil, the actual pencil, and take the actual package and go through these things. And it's funny because, well, I'm not doing the returns myself anymore or doing anything like that. Each return has so much of a story attached to it. You can really see everything that's happened, or a lot of what has happened, all these material points that have happened in someone's life, just by reading through even a federal T1 general, right? Like it's asking questions about, are they healthy? Did they give to charity? How old are you? Do you have a spouse or a dependent, kids or your spouse otherwise? Did you have a job? Are you self-employed? Where's the money coming from? Whether it's commissions, dividends, interest income, investments, disability, that kind of thing, right? Like it's all there. There are so many points of conversation. There are so many elements to your story that are unfortunately taxable and show up on your tax return. So you come up with this incredible picture of what your life was. And if you use it as a look at 2023, and of course, you know, you just kind of DocuSign and click, click, click through. But if you actually get your return and you look through it and you kind of say, okay, what was the sum total of my efforts last year? What was it? Was it just a salary? Is it a salary I'm happy with? Was it a commission or a new business that I'd started or some other initiative that had brought some money in and underway? And I mean, that opens a whole other wide range of questions up. But the idea here is when you see where you've been, you can kind of map out where you're going, right? And the fact that we're already through the first quarter of 2024, it just kind of goes to show that if you don't make the plans, the time goes. And what are you tracking for the remainder of 2024? So having tax time at this particular moment is perfect in terms of not only the back look, but also the forward look, because we still have time in this year to make a material change and a material direction forward for ourselves in terms of seeing where we were and then figuring out what our targets are and where we want to be at the end of the year, so that next year when we look back, we're like, hey, you know what? I materially improved because of it. All of that from a basic T1 general. God, it's like I should have a job as a financial planner or something.
Well, yeah, you can see the ups, you can see your downs, see if you're better off, see if you're worse off. But yeah, it's just like a little snapshot of the year of what you did, and hopefully it kind of stirs you to kind of think about what you want to do in the year forward, whether you want to take things in your own control and do something, or if you are just continuing to just react to everything outside of your control. It's all that fun stuff you get to reflect on this time of year.
Okay, we might be taking it a little too seriously now, but as these things go, what we want the rest of this episode to be is kind of more quick tips, kind of the quick and dirty that we've seen from different sources, from the CPA Association. They've put up some stuff from the government site. They have whole pages of stuff on the federal government site where they're kind of preparing people for all of these events and changes and things that have happened. And I mean, even just in conversations that we've had, like this past week, I was talking to my lawyer about employment and employments and contracts and how so many people are now in this position where maybe they had worked for a firm in the past and suddenly they are no longer an employee. They're now a contract worker. They've gotten a bit of bump of salary, but they've gotten a whole lot of other expenses that they're now responsible for, in addition to things like CPP and things like EI and things like, I mean, depending on how you're classified, there could even be some health and safety rules that you have to follow and things like that, right? So a lot of changes in liability and how that's shifting. And my lawyer was kind of saying to me, well, you know, duties and control over process are so important in deciding if someone is an employee or not. Because as employers, of course, we want to control everything under the sun. But as a worker, it's whether or not you have that freedom that really determines how you're categorized. And that's going to materially affect your tax situation. Because like I said, you will have more that you are materially responsible for if you are actually, in fact, a contract worker versus an employee of a firm. So that employee-employer relationship will actually take some of the burden off of you. And the lawyer I was talking to, he gave me a good example, and I'm just going to repeat it here. He was talking about, like, if you hire a plumber because you need to fix your toilet or your sink or whatever it might be, the fellow is going to come to your house and he's going to bring his own car. He's going to bring his own tools. You're not going to tell him what to do because, you know, if you could fix it yourself, you wouldn't be calling a plumber. And he's going to decide how to solve the problem. So these are all kind of material elements of what makes someone a contract worker, right? You've hired him to do the job, you've set the fee to do that job, and then he's the one fixing the toilet.
I don't know. There's actually been a couple times personally I've had to lend tools to contractors.
Okay, whether or not they're prepared is a completely different conversation, but it's an interesting picture as we've seen a shift in how people work. And you can make the same conversation about working from home, right? Like when I was looking at an employment contract recently, a lot of workers get the ability at their employer's discretion. So it's not really a right, but they may be given the ability to work from home. But the amount of control that an employer can exert, even the ability to go into that place to make sure that data management and privacy policies and things like that are being followed, kind of blew my mind a little bit, right? Like, when I sign up for work from home, I'm not thinking, hey, I want my boss sitting at my kitchen table checking on who else around me can see my laptop or can see where I've stored my company files or access to security systems and making sure that I'm operating in a safe and secured space and environment that follows all the policies and procedures that you probably also signed when you agreed to do this.
Yeah, I think it's less that your boss wants to come and do it. It's more that the regulators are forcing them to do it to some degree.
Yeah, and I guess maybe that's part of the offloading of liability and responsibility, right? And contracting from a contract point of view, you really are accepting, along with the higher wage, some of that is a compensation for the risks that come along with it. And like you said, if you're in a more traditional employee-employer relationship, that need to exert control over the employees to make things standardized, I wonder how much enforcement we're going to see in these areas in the future. But again, not exactly what we're here to talk about today. So let's get into some kind of quick and dirty tips that we found that could be material helpful for people both for 2023 and 2024. So let's talk for a minute about COVID-19 benefits. And here we are in 2024 talking about COVID-19 benefits. But a lot of people found themselves in 2023 in a position where they had to repay some stuff, right? Because, well, you know what, let's not get into the reasons why. But a lot of people found themselves in this position.
Unwillingly. Some people found this position willingly and got fired. I know there's a block of CRA workers who were claiming CERB while on duty still, but the last couple of years we've seen the federal government kind of do a pullback on, okay, we gave you free money, now give it back to us with interest. And what they've kind of announced is that you can now kind of assign the money you're paying back as a write-off on your taxes.
Yeah, you know, we found this on the government website where it basically said if you repaid a benefit amount on or after January 1st, 2023, you can claim a deduction, but it is in the year that you made that repayment. So they're looking at a tax year, January 1st to December 31st. And there were options if this had happened prior or where you could split it between a couple different tax returns. But now they're saying, nope, you're locking it into the year. And hopefully then all of this should soon be behind us, right? I don't know how much backlog there is left in that system, but something to consider and maybe a friendly reminder if you do have something outstanding that you need to settle, this is a good time to settle it up.
Yeah, don't quote me on this, but I remember hearing some details like around Christmas. I think it was still about 2/3 of the amounts unrepaid.
Wild, hey? That is completely insane. And priorities, right? When you're given free money, you don't exactly want to give it back. But if these things we have to do, sometimes if it wasn't ours, what are you going to do, right? You pay the man, I suppose. But let's get into another change that was announced recently. And this one was pretty material or will be for anyone who's planning to buy a home, specifically people that are looking at participating in the home buyer's plan. And this was just a recent announcement by the Minister of Finance and just a few days ago, where we saw that they are now deciding at the federal level that first-time home buyers, of course, that are qualifying and that make a qualifying purchase are able to draw as much as $60,000, up from $35,000 from their RSP to put towards that first-time home purchase as it's defined under the program. Now, that is substantial if you think about it as there's two people involved, right, that could each now pull $60,000 from their RSPs, or in some cases, group RSPs if your group plan allows withdrawals. Not all do, but some do. This, in addition to the FHSA, can provide some serious cash if you're willing to kind of do the savings work. Now, cons of an initiative like this, of course, it's wonderful to help people get their foot in the door into that first property, but it's also a significant chunk out of your retirement, right? And this idea that that money is no longer compounding year over year on your behalf, even though you do have to pay it off on a schedule, and that schedule as well has changed.
Yeah. So step one, have $60,000 available in your RSP, which is something that is more of a question. We've been seeing like annual RSP contributions declining on average over the last 5 years. That as Christine was saying, yeah, this number is going from $35,000 to $60,000. Another big change is before you had 2 years to begin repayment. Now that's being extended out to 5 years until you have to start repayment. But correct me if I'm wrong, I think it's still a 15-year total repayment window.
I haven't seen any changes. It was originally a 15-year window. Like I said, this was just announced, so the announcement's a little light on the details. I'm sure we'll see it rolled out in a much more concrete way, and I'm sure we'll kind of get the proper Coles Notes version of this other than just the initial announcement. So yes.
Yeah, I think this announcement was made in someone's front porch, actually, with some of the videos I've seen. So kind of out there really quick, still getting things figured out. But yeah, you got $60,000 available, 5-year wait to start paying it back. And then I think it still falls within the 15 years. So we were kind of talking, I was talking to one of our staff, and this is kind of going to make like a second mortgage for some people having to pay this back $60,000 over possibly 10 years on top of your mortgage also, if you can qualify for everything. So we'll see if this is a net benefit or not for most people.
Over the 15 years. Yeah, I think it comes down to goals again, right? Like the idea that if you are saving up for your first home, you might want to use this plan, a scheme like this, to be able to put the money in your RSP, get that tax refund generated because now there's more going into an RSP that gives you something that you can actually get back and accelerate your timeline on this. Like do more with the money by then saving your refund. So you're essentially making that deposit and then using the taxes that you got back as additional savings to put you further ahead and save time on achieving that goal. But at least in the way that the program has been set up in the past, unless they decide to change this, the way it had worked prior was if you do not make a repayment from that 15-year schedule, so original balance divided by 15 years, you just have to have that amount added as taxable income. And I think that a lot of people kind of got stuck on this because there's actually a different schedule that you have to file to, along with your tax return, to designate this contribution into your RSP as a home buyer's repayment. And a lot of people miss that. A lot of people just put money back in their RSP and don't really think about it, right? So if you don't designate it specifically, then you might not get that applied to. Now, when you designate RSP contribution as a repayment, you're not going to get another deduction because you already got a deduction for the original contribution that came as part of the $60,000 that you eventually took out. Clear as mud, right? Jeez.
Yeah. And then another downside would be you're going to lose the compounding growth over 5, 10, 15 years on that money. Some of the pundits are always saying that they're already worried this could push housing prices up. I know I saw some report this morning anticipating a 10% rise in home prices this year and 20% rise between now and 2026. So like I said, we'll see if this turns into a net benefit, this combined with FHSA and really everything else going on.
Well, and kind of on the flip side of this, we also heard the announcement at the same time that the federal government was allowing amortizations on some, quote unquote, mortgages to stretch out up to 30 years, as opposed to the 25-year schedule that we're used to, which has been amended on an exception basis prior. Like the lenders do have a good amount of discretion, or maybe not a good amount, but they do have some discretion.
Yeah, and the big asterisk here is for new builds only. So this is for a brand new condo, house, townhouse that has not been sold before. You are the first person buying it. And I know this isn't talked about in the article and stuff, but one of the things you think about when you are buying, like you are the first buyer, is that you will get hit with GST. And different municipalities, like I know Winnipeg, for example, have a separate new home tax. I think it was like 2.5% a few years ago. So when you are a first-time buyer, you are going to get hit with various extra fees and taxes depending on jurisdiction. And maybe they're just doing this to help compensate, or they just didn't think about that at all.
We'll never know what goes on in their minds. Yes. And I think it's important to also say that with the longer amortization, why are they doing this? The reason they're doing this is because it makes that payment that you have to pay, so your monthly mortgage payment or biweekly or whatever it might be, lower, a little bit lower. So they're saying affordability, quote unquote, as the monthly payment or the monthly amount you're putting towards your mortgage. But that's not the whole picture, and it never is. Amortizations need to be looked at the total costs overall for holding that mortgage as long as you will hold it, including re-amortization. So if you've gone through a 5-year term and you decide to do a renewal, and as part of that renewal, you decide managing payment is more important to you, or you're forced to make that decision because interest rates have gone up, then you'll extend your amortization. But that is a horrible, horrible, horrible choice, not only for your timeline to retirement, but also for the total costs that you will pay on the property. It becomes really, really, really expensive over a prolonged period of time if you choose to do this.
Yeah, this is how a $1 million mortgage turns into $1.8 million to $2 million in repayment.
Oh, it's wild. It's absolutely insane when you actually do the math on it. And when I get new people coming in their 50s or even 60s, and they've got 20 plus year mortgages, and I say, oh, how long have you been at your property? And they say 20 years. And you just kind of, oh, yes, you saved a few bucks on the monthly payment, but you could have been like 5 years out from having this whole thing completely paid. And now you're looking at figuring out how to continue to pay that ongoing bill during your retirement. And I mean, that's not even taking into consideration lines of credits and the money in, money out that people tend to do when you have access to a large sum of money because your property value is elevated.
And I guess to kind of piggyback off, if you want to know the state of the current market, we have suddenly started getting a whole bunch more wholesalers and salespeople talking to us about lines of credit and HELOCs to offer to our clients. So you have a pretty good idea where the economy is going already, and it's just going to go back to the same mess it was a couple of years ago pretty shortly.
Well, and seriously, I was just in an event last week where the fellow that was speaking was saying something along the lines of, yes, the economy is growing. Yes, we're seeing good numbers, especially in the U.S. stock market, but that's going to ramp up inflation, folks. And ramping up inflation is going to put us right back to square one in this whole interest rate cycle where we could find ourselves on that runaway train once again. And no one wants to kind of relive the past few years, right? Like, we've already been in this totally bizarro environment, and everybody's kind of ready to move on. But an over exuberant economy actually does have a bit of a downside in this type of strange interest rate environment.
Yeah, all the kind of economists and pundits who were calling for like rate cuts in like Q1, Q2 of this year have suddenly changed their tune to the end of the year, which is something we've been saying since, what, Q3 last year?
Yeah, seriously, listen to the episodes. We record this stuff. We put ourselves on record. And yeah, no, I think, Cam, you were saying to me like end of year, fall at earliest, right? Even potentially. Well, I think we're still in that camp. But who knows if it'll get pushed even further, right? As circumstances change, they always give themselves the holy grail of, oh, you know, something's changed. We can change our mind, change our decision at any time. There's no consequences or implications to this. Not really, right?
Yeah, they came out of the break room and didn't see their shadow, so we kept the rates low.
I love that. That's awesome. Just popping up out of that hole in the ground, hey? Got it. And it's not once a year. It's every time they make a rate announcement. Love the visual. Anyways, last point on real estate, really, I swear, in 2023, those anti-flipping rules that we had talked about prior came into effect January 1st. This is the deal where if you make a profit on the sale of a residential real estate property, so that could be a rental, it could be personal use, and you hold that property for less than 365 days, it becomes business income and not a capital gains. Huge, huge, huge tax implications, tax differences there, right? Half. A material flip side to that is if you are the person making this investment, you now have to look at your carrying costs for that entire year. And that is a huge disincentive in this current environment, which I believe was the nature of this decision anyways. There is, however, an exemption that might be applicable if there was a life-changing event like a death, a divorce, breakdown of marriage, that kind of thing.
Yeah, and there's also exemptions for forcibly moving because of work, willingly moving because of work, and there's also one if you fear for your life. No, I'm serious. It's in there.
Is it really?
Yeah.
Oh, gosh. This time, Cam read the fine print more than I did, so we will take his word on it. Home office space. So if you found yourself doing a little work from home, we'd mentioned this one before in a prior show, you can't use that flat rate method anymore starting in 2023. So if you had just filed that as material, so you're having to prove your costs once again, you're having to look at your square footage once again. Back to the pre-COVID way of doing things, essentially. So that little break we had where we could quick and dirty it is gone.
Yeah, you're back to being treated like a contractor in this regard. I guess another quick thing to kind of know is that for 2024, the indexation increase is up to 4.7%. So this is the figure the government is using to do income-tested benefits, OAS payments, setting tax brackets and the like. So 2024, it's 4.7%, down from 6.3% in 2023 and up from 2.4% in 2022. So you are getting a clear picture of the wild ride of inflation that we've been going through the last couple of years. But this is the number that the government's going to use to kind of tweak your benefits and your tax rate in 2024.
And it is important that these things are adjusted. So that is a good thing. So those were kind of some of the big things that jumped out to us this tax season, both for 2023 and 2024, as you are making your way through. Always important to not only have a very good accountant, and what did you say, Cam? Bring them a coffee, because my goodness, we'll know they'll need it. But also to have those conversations with them, to have them take you through what is available on a tax return, just to make sure that you're not missing anything and that your story that you're writing that we see as you fill these things out is complete, and that there's no deduction left unturned. There's no advantage that you didn't get just because you didn't know, right? And you didn't think to look. So if you're nerdy like me, feel free to find a T1 General online. You're also going to need the supplement, because there's two parts to it. There's going to be the federal and your province. So make sure that you're looking at both. There are material differences. And it's just such a good way to understand all of what's available, to understand all of what the full picture is, other than just relying on the computer to kind of think for us. And you click and you click and you click and you sign and you're done.
Which is the easier way to do now, because I saw that they actually cut out all the instructions from the paper version. So you kind of have to do the computer one now if you don't know what you're doing.
We were laughing at that. They cut, approximate 30 pages out of next year's package. So that's hilarious. So yeah, if you needed a step-by-step instructional on how to do your paper return, good luck, folks. Get your accountant. Bring them that coffee. So if you're looking to talk to someone about your full financial story, you can always find us at Braun Financial, braunfinancial.com. We love having conversations with you. As always, you can find us on the Facebook group, It's Personal Finance Canada. And until next time, take care.
All the best.
And pay your taxes.